Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with a musician shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Ryan Edwards, founder and CEO of Ordu, a music technology company tracking the music played in public spaces so artists and songwriters are paid fairly. After a successful career as a drummer in indie rock band The Lines, scoring a top 10 hit and opening for REM and The Killers, amongst others, Ryan's band was dropped suddenly after coming off stage to 80,000 people. Ryan turned to retail, eventually running stores and his own entrepreneurial ventures, then switching into roles at Visa, Bink and Grapple Mobile. But it was in 2018, having heard his band's song Domino Effect, playing in a department store and wondering whether they'd be paid the royalties they were due, that Ryan discovered how little data there was about the distribution of royalties and how unfair the system could be. Ordu was founded in 2019 and backed by music royalty, wait for it, drum roll, Paul McCartney, Bjorn Ulvaeus from ABBA and Elton John, none other than him. Ordu's audio meter plugs into venues like cafes, gyms, shops and bars, recognising the songs played and sending data automatically to performance rights organisations. Musicians can get the money they're rightly owed and a more accurate breakdown of their reach as well. It's great to have you here. Thank you for joining. You are a musician, first and foremost. Is that how you describe yourself still? Or is that gone now, Ryan?
I think probably semi-retired musician, maybe a bedroom musician. But wish I'd probably kept it up more. But as life gets busy and you have children and a family, it definitely takes a backseat.
But I mean, 80,000 people, the buzz of being a very young... How old were you at the time?
I'd have been early 20s.
Early 20s. I mean, my eldest is 21. He's in fact a drummer, like you, but he's at university studying music.
Great.
At Southampton University. But you went for it.
Yeah, and ironically, that my plan was to go and study jazz drumming at Leeds College of Music. So I'd got in, I'd done my A-levels, and then we signed a record deal. So I guess I got probably a different level of experience because we got to be me, we got to tour, we got to play to huge crowds, meet our heroes and all that. And there's always that kind of, I guess, question in my head of what if I'd have actually gone and made it to Leeds College of Music? What would have happened? Would I have gone so far deep down in jazz rather than kind of the indie and rock and roll route that I ended up going?
Also, would you have ended up here talking to me now about a business you set up? Who knows?
Maybe not.
Life's a mystery.
It is.
But that back into when you were 19, 20, 21 and it's happening and then suddenly you're dropped.
Yeah.
What does that do to you as a young person?
I mean, pretty soul-destroying. You know, I mean, we as you say, yeah, we were in Europe, I think we were in Austria, played that massive gig, and it was like, that's it, it's done, it's over. And I say, you know, I think we left on the Thursday evening. I moped around on the Friday, and, you know, by the Monday, I was like, I've got to go and get a job now. This is it, right? You didn't go to uni, you didn't go and take the preferred educational route or kind of musical training route that I thought I was going to go. And I think it was a good reality shock. I think from a good working class background, so it was like, okay, head down, now go and work and figure this out.
Amazingly robust response, though, for a young person.
Do you
look back and go, phew, that was lucky. Thank God I didn't, you know, capitulate, because a lot of people would have spent not a day or 2 days moping. They probably would have spent a good few months or even longer. Or we would never have this conversation because they never actually went and did something in this way.
It's true. I think a lot of it comes back to parents. I think I don't think my mum or dad would have let me mope around for too long. They'd have said, come on, you've got bills to pay. We're not going to keep you. You know, you need to go and get on with it. And I think I've always been quite driven. I always knew there was a world out there. And I guess I'd had a flavour of that world through the music and being able to tour and see bits. So I think for me, it was... Actually, I want to go out and want to experience more and I want to be part of it again. So it was kind of, head down, get on working, go and earn some money and try and grow a career as well. Did meet a girl as well. So it was...
Is the girl still with
she
you?
She is. She's now, 20 years later, my wife.
Ryan, you've boy done well.
Exactly.
Well, the band may not have happened, but you've got a much more important prize. Exactly. And just in your own words, Ordu, I mean, we know, you know, people have heard of you and heard of the story. Mm. You heard the thing, you heard the music, and I wonder if it's, you know, they're going to capture this for me. Just how do you describe Odoo to people that haven't got a clue what it is?
Cool. So we describe ourselves as a technology and a data business, and we're serving the music industry. So everybody will know recognition engines. You probably would have used Shazam on a phone or seen smart speakers. So we're almost the next generation of that, but we're industrialized. So we're at a huge scale, and we're in anywhere from pubs and clubs to retail outlets. I mean, we're in just far afield as kind of schools and nurseries as well, because of course they play and broadcast music in those environments as well. And we're capturing and we're logging all the data behind that music, so it can then be used for royalty distributions and insights across the industry as well.
You know, your arrival at that point, and we've started very quickly in sort of, 2005, and we've skirted over sort of 15 years almost of working. In that working period, you went out and got a job, good working class families and all that. Did you ever have aspirations to really run your own thing, or were you quite happy doing what you were doing?
No, honestly, I was pretty happy. So, I kind of had that professional career and was growing it, year on year, bit by bit. And there was never a moment of, I want to be a founder, I want to be a CEO. I think it was this idea came, it happened. It was that moment in the department store hearing my own music, and then actually a few weeks later receiving my statement and going, oh, okay, that I don't understand the correlation, or there is no correlation. And kind of just almost, I call it Google bashing, just sat there probably one Sunday evening going, how does it work? What's going on? And what I found was articles and forums and things by lawyers written saying the whole system was really antiquated. It was being done manually. There wasn't a lot of data in there. There was a lot of inaccuracies in there, like even down to cover versions. If it's somebody's out there doing a manual survey, they might write down Yesterday by the Beatles, but it could have been a cover. So, of course, Lennon and McCartney need to be paid for the composition, but then the recording artist on the other side needs to be paid. So there was a lot of things like that. And actually, I was in a fintech business, which we're in the process of taking a large investment, and I decided it was my time after a few years there to move on, and it was investment from a big bank, and I was like, could end up wearing a suit here. Not too sure
about
that.
Don't think you want to do that, right?
And I'd got another job with a huge fitness brand that was really, really growing aggressively, and had this idea during the period, and actually reached out to the chairman of PRS for Music here in the UK, because I'd built a prototype at my kitchen table. And the intention...
And PRS, for people that don't know?
Oh, yeah. So it's the Performing Rights Society, and they collect all these license fees, and they're the people who actually pay the artists. And the intention of that meeting was genuinely to give him the tech, to say, hey, I just built this. I think this would be really useful
for you. So you had built something by
then? Yeah. So at this point, I just, almost at my kitchen table, just built a very, very basic prototype just to show that I could recognise, do a small catalogue and report it in a really succinct
way.
Just
out of interest, what did that look like, that thing you built?
So there were a couple of sides to it. So I'd built kind of a web portal. So you think about going onto any website and where you could see the songs coming in. So artist title, runtime, and got some metadata tags in there, which had kind of gone and found on the internet. And then the other second bit is what's known as a Raspberry Pi in the development world. So a Raspberry Pi kind of looks like a really... over technical small computer. So it's about the size of a phone, a little bit thicker, and it's kind of like a blank chipboard that you can write code onto, and it's a way a lot of developers will practice and write their code onto, so then you can test and learn with it, and then of course then that's how you go and scale. So when I think back, and of course I've still got it in my home office, that little Raspberry Pi device was the life-changing moment, because of course I went to PRS and said, hey, I'm going to give you this. I just think this could be really useful. And you guys, you're a huge organization. Off you go. And it was the chairman in that moment who said, Ryan, he said, like, you need to build this for us, and you need to build it because it's not just a UK problem. It's a global problem. So actually, if you can do it and you can scale a business off this, he said, you'll be onto a winning streak. So,
But even just listening to you talk about it, and Raspberry Pi, I'm very familiar. Yeah. I think I met the founder many, many years ago as well. The audacity of you trying to put this together and the belief that you could... I mean, did you know how big the problem was? I guess that's my thing. Because if it's that big, sometimes people just go, that falls in the bucket of just too complicated. But it didn't for you.
Well, I think it was because, like every business, I just took very small steps each stage. And actually, looking back, 6 years ago now, definitely didn't know the size of the problem and didn't know some of the challenges that we come up against as we try to scale, particularly music industry lawyers. They're an interesting bunch. But, you know, like kind of having to work and
sometimes you've got one on your board. Them.
So, yeah, exactly. He's brilliant. He's my common sense lawyer. But actually just, I think because we saw it as so small, so insular, and just went, okay, let's take it to the next level, let's build. And actually, I'd shown some friends who were also in tech. I'd been in a business that had raised investments. So I went to a couple of the people who had invested in that and kind of said, look, almost this is what I found. I wasn't even going and pitching saying, hey, can I have some money? Can I do this? I'm going to build a business. It was very, very organic. And every person that I spoke to, outside the initial reaction that went, that can't be right. It's got to be more advanced than that. It's got to be cleverer. And then you'd say to them, I'd say to them, like, just go and Google Bash, right? Tell me what you come. And actually, what every single person then would come back and go, oh my life, yeah, you were absolutely right. I was like, of course I was always right. But you know, like really, you know, really validating. And everybody that I was talking to was coming up with the same conclusion. And then even going to like people like Cliff, who's on our board, you know, brilliant music rights lawyer, and approaching him again on LinkedIn and saying, hey, I just want to talk to you about this. Further validation saying, yes, this has plagued my entire career. And it's, you know, it's why I've wrapped the board around me that we have, because we've got music managers, we've got the ex-chairman of PRS, we've got Cliff as a lawyer, people who are running song funds who've all just come in and said, this is a problem. We've got to help you shape this and kind of grow the business.
Stay with me for much more from my guest. It's Ryan Edwards. He'll be back in a couple of minutes. Right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Academy Digital Sessions, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. In this clip, Joe Hancock, partner in cyber risk and complex investigations at Michigan Dorea, is joined by Emric Bernard-Jones, intelligence manager in the same team, and they are discussing cybercrime and how to be safe online.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
What would your advice be to someone who is like, I've got a social media profile, I like it, I use it, it's part of my brand. What sort of things should they be thinking about to keep themselves safe when using it?
In terms of general rules, at least ones that I use for myself, I would never post a photograph or a video or a reel or a story or a TikTok or anything live at a location. If you're out for dinner, there's no real reason that you have to post it then and there. You can wait 4 hours after leaving, or you can wait till the next day. It's still going to have the same impact, but it's just going to kind of lower the safety risk that is brought out when you're showcasing where you are all the time. I would also say never put anything that is an asset online or in a public forum where a bunch of people can see. You might be really, really proud of your new watch, but unless your job is watch collector or watch salesman, you don't really need to put that up there, because A, it's going to make you potentially a target, but B, people can see how much that watch, you know, costs and then target you for all types of different stuff. You suddenly become a much more appealing target for, I don't know, a love bombing campaign if you're posting 7 different Rolexes. So I would just avoid all of the kind of trappings of a glamorous lifestyle. It might be really, really interesting to flex it, but unless you're gaining something from doing that, you just leave it in the drafts.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit michcon.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guest today is Ryan Edwards, in case you hadn't noticed, founder and CEO of Audu, a music technology company tracking the music played in public spaces so artists and songwriters are paid fairly. The fairly word's really interesting, because of course you in your pursuit of this were just going, this isn't right. Mm. There's music being played and people aren't being recompensed for it.
Yeah.
There's just a bit of the kit. So you move on and you start building stuff. And who's the first person that sort of buys this? I know you got some funding, obviously, but who were the very first people that said, all right, we'll install this, we'll see what happens?
So this is where life gets really complex because of the pandemic. So I'd taken on the funding. We'd built the first version and we were due to launch our first pilot, self-funded pilot, in the UK in April of 2020. just as the entire world.
Great timing.
Yeah.
Well done, Ron.
So I know. So I had to go out to those investors, shareholders, and say, it's going to take a little bit longer. And of course, they all came back and went, look, A, nobody launches on time. B, like, because the world shut down, it's a fairly good excuse. And I was quite happy to go and go, look, but we were ready. We were genuinely ready. So we then replotted our launch for the November of 20, which is Q lockdown 2 in the UK.
My 50th birthday, which never happened. Well, it did happen, but we didn't celebrate, to be clear.
I'm obviously Zoom.
It was almost that. It was cups of tea outside the house at a distance.
Well, my daughter's first birthday was 3 days after the first lockdown. So I think it took her to 3 years old to have a birthday where she could see people other than my wife and I or family via Zoom.
It's all in the rearview mirror, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're not tarred by this.
No.
We're not at all. We haven't been traumatised, any of us. It's fine.
No, but we still are using it. But after the second lockdown happened in the November, I thought, okay, I've got to really show A, my shareholders that we've done something, and the team was really driven, and we were kind of waiting. So good old LinkedIn, went back to LinkedIn again and reached out to the Australian Rights Organisation, which is known as APRA, which stands for the Australian Performing Rights Association. Introduced who we are, what we're doing, and said, look, you know, we'd love for you to be the first in the world. And they came back and went, absolutely. Brilliant. Which then gave us a whole different challenge, because of course it's a hardware product. So if you're software, you just deploy it over the air.
Yeah.
But hardware, we're like, how do we do this? So the research moved to, okay, who's going to know the environments that we're going to go into? We need to know somebody who's going to understand retail, hospitality, fitness. And we found a CCTV business that operated in Sydney and connected with them and said, could we use some of your installers to just go out
and they pop it on?
And they plug it in.
So is that what it is? It's a plug-in. It's a speaker in reverse.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can hear
so it's
what's
a very small
on.
Device. I can show you one. I've got one in my bag, I'll show you one. Maybe we'll hold it up. But
high tech.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm very excited.
But we went out and we said, can you just help? Can you do this? And of course, we paid them and they went out.
And why did you choose them out of interest?
So we really liked them as a business, how they were. Like their kind of values from just their website seemed to match us. We had a few calls often in the middle of the night because we were trying to sell to them. Say, can you help us? And they were just brilliant. They were an absolutely brilliant business.
They didn't think you were mad, Ryan.
Oh, completely. And I think I actually didn't tell the shareholders before we did this, because I was like, okay, because if this fails, I've got to keep it quiet. We've got to figure out a different way to do this. But I think they saw a bit of madness, but maybe a bit of brilliance, because the team that we employ are amazing. So I think they saw that opportunity. I think Australians, they're great to do business with, because actually they love innovation. There's always a British connection to Australia anyway, and I think they were just really up for trying and doing something different and showing some progress.
And you install it, and how quickly is it capturing what you
so,
need?
So we sent all of our units out. We said to the CCTV business, could you do us a favour? Can you plug them in the office just to make sure? Because again, we'd never even been able to test this out of the UK. And we don't use Wi-Fi. We use an eSIM, which is a SIM card built onto the board, because we didn't want to go into a venue and say, what's your password? How do we log on? All that. We didn't want to disturb them. We just wanted to plug it in and leave them alone. And of course, the shipment arrived, they plugged them in, and every single one connected. So kudos to our CTO and our tech team for what they did there, because that was amazing.
And then you're up and running.
About 3 days later, they went out. And it's funny, because the Australian Society, of course, we've got to know really well over the last few years. In my world, there's a gym and aquatic centre just on the outskirts of Sydney called the Lane Cove Aquatic Centre, and that's the first place that we plugged in. And of course, when I then was able to go out post kind of lockdowns and having to sit in a hotel room for 2 weeks, it was one of the first things I said to our local team. I said, I've got to go there. And they're going, you're weird. This is really weird. I was going, no, I just need to go. I need to see it. I need to take a photo. I need to take a selfie. I just need, it's such an important pivotal moment in you know, my life that means nothing to anybody else, you know. And I've told the story a million times, but actually it worked. It still works. That original one is still in there, you know, a few years later, and it's reporting and people are getting paid because of it. So it does show sometimes just pushing and trying and taking those steps, you know, it definitely pays off.
And being weird. Ryan Edwards, my weird business shape, today, rather successful as well. He's the founder and CEO of Ordu, and he had the audacity to take this to Australia, and it's all working out rather well. Ducking and diving, inventively making it up as you go along, by the sounds of it, in a fabulous way. Now, you seem to be a person who wears his stress very lightly. If you have any stress, you just sort of I mean, do you get stressed? You don't look like you do.
Yeah, I think I internalize it quite well because I think you have to, particularly when you're running a business day to day. And also I've wrapped a brilliant team around me who I think we built those values and we built that culture within us to actually support each other. And when somebody's having that tough time or the bad day, you just go give them room to breathe and support them through it. So, yeah.
You've built something, obviously, this is 5 years ago. We were talking about the moment in November. Now we're almost 5 years forward. It's going gangbusters. Mm-hmm. You're scaling. America is the next frontier.
Yeah.
How do you retain that sense of what you stand for, that sense of tightness? What does your team look like these days? How do you deal with issues in the team?
So I think there's a few things. I always say my first employee, Jess, who runs our marketing, still with me, she's our culture queen. So, you know, she's the one that is really upbeat, really positive. And, you know, the second somebody joins the business, it doesn't matter what department they're in, she wants to meet them straight away, whether they're on the opposite side of the world or here. She's straight on a Zoom, straight into them, getting them to go for a coffee and just really getting to understand them as a person. So we've got, you know, team members like Jess who have really helped shape our culture and make sure, particularly if I'm traveling, I've got to go off somewhere, that she can be here kind of keep the atmosphere and keep the drive going as well.
How would you define the atmosphere or the vibe in the
team? I think super positive, super happy most of the time, I'm sure, you know, not every day, but actually where the team really challenge and really hold each other to account as well. So if somebody is falling behind on something, it's like, actually, why have they fallen behind? How can we help them? How can we kind of all roll our sleeves up and get in on it as well? So, yeah.
And juxtaposing that with, I mentioned the celebrity investors, obviously very famous, big names in the music industry. What does that do internally as well? It must be quite exciting that Sir Paul McCartney or Sir Elton John or Bjorn from ABBA. I mean, those are about the biggest names in the music industry.
Completely. So yeah, I think it's for us, you know, we still see ourselves as this little tech business. It's like a little project that we're doing and we're working on. But it's validation. It's for them to go out and explain, you know, I guess to their families and their friends of, hey, look at what we're doing here. You know, I mean, I always joke, since the band and retail, most of my career was kind of digital and data and technology. And I still don't think my parents really knew what I do. You know,
do you think they know now?
No, I think they're getting it now. But, you know, like I always joke, like, so when I was at Visa, I headed up data and we were doing a lot of data insight with kind of airlines and retailers. I remember my dad, he'd been in an M&S store once and he'd seen a Visa logo at the till and he said, oh, was that your team, son? And I just, yeah, it was. Because you know, it was just easier to try.
Yeah, there's a few hundred thousand people working
exactly,
at Visa.
Yeah.
That was my logo.
Yeah, just go with it. Just because it was just easier. But I think having that and kind of going, you know, again, back to parents or back to, you know, even the team's families, started a business. Okay, cool. I've raised some investment. Okay, cool. By the way, Bjorn from ABBA just got in touch. What? You know, all of a sudden it's like, okay, what does that mean? Like, you're not talking to him though, right? You're talking to his team. No, I'm talking to him directly. He now calls me directly, which is kind of weird moments that you have in your life. And then then you get this message, Bjorn has told Elton's team, and then they've told another team. And you have these moments. And I had it really recently with the guys from U2, which just God of a band, and they played the Sphere in Las Vegas, and they said, oh yeah, David had turned up, and then of course they're talking about David Van Shelton's point, and we were talking about you backstage. there was no way in my life, right, that was happening. It's just, but you have these little moments, and I think, you know, you get to tell them to the team, you get to share them, you know, the team get to go to some pretty cool events as well. You know, we get invited to bits and you say, great, it's your turn to go to the Brits, to the Ivors, to all these kind of things, and they're in the room with, I think what we would probably all describe as greatness or just gods that we all adore. And I think that's it. They, you know, there's the tech element to it, but actually there's the really sexy music bit that we get to play in.
If you need someone to make the tea, I am available. Final joke with my guest today, Ryan, coming up, Ryan Edwards, that is, in a few minutes. We've got some music from the Black Keys for you as well. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
Ryan Edwards, my business shaper, just for a few more minutes. You're very humble, Ryan. And from the get-go, we've spoken about the influence your mum and dad had, the fact that, you know, you had this massive knock from the heights of 80,000 people watching you to zero, and you go out to the shops. You talked so gently about your career before this business. It's incredible. I mean, to me, I guess my question is, there's nothing you can be taught about that. That is just within you. Do you pinch yourself a lot about where you've got to in life?
Every second of every day. Because it's, as we said, this was never the plan, right? You know, I joke to friends of my daughter's, you know, over the weekend at a 7-year-old's birthday party, you know, that this was just a small idea that really got out of hand. It just kept going. But I think that's part of life. I think it's, you know, grow up in the Midlands, you know, they wouldn't let you kind of get above your character. It's just not allowed in that kind of space. So
And yet you've got a dream, because if you don't dream, this business, which is, you know, you are solving a major global problem.
Of course.
You're kind of, no wonder the Elton Johns and the Paul McCartneys love you, because this goes to the heart of intellectual property.
Yeah.
This goes to the heart of what's going to happen in the world as we move into AI and all sorts of things. So you're very much the white knight, but how do you keep your feet on the ground?
Wife and daughter, they would brutally tell me very, very quickly. I think the team that we spoke about, but I think the one that I've always tried to do is wrap people around that really inspired us or that could really help us along the journey. So be it some of the people who invested who were experts of their industry, be it they came from finance and they could really help us put together a funding round. Or we mentioned Cliff, you know, a rights lawyer who is amazing. Chris Herbert, music manager, you know, Chris created every 90s band that I grew up listening to, pop band, you know, and it's like my wife now still gets starstruck when she sees Chris, because like every t-shirt, every CD that she begged her parents for, you know, it was pretty much Chris had put it together, you know. I think her parents would like to ask him for some of that money back. But like, it's all these people who have been titans of industry, but in the sectors and the parts of the industry that they've really understood, that we can go to and really lean on in different ways. And sometimes, and Chris is the perfect example, if I've had a really tough day or just something's been tough, Chris is the one I just phone and moan at, right? And he just listens, and it's really annoying because he never gives an answer, but he just listens and he just keeps me talking. And by the end of that 30-minute call, I'm through it. I'm like, how are you that wise? Like, it's too good. It's driving me crazy. But actually having guys like Chris, having, you know, Nigel, who was the chairman of PRS, who is just a titan of that industry, everywhere you go, doesn't matter where I go in the world, right? And you say, hey, Nigel's our chairman, people are like, oh my God, we adore Nigel. He is the best, right? And then I think one of the other really pivotal moments I was just thinking about was, you know, I kind of got three employees at the time. We were just getting ready to scale and build out some stuff. And Abbey Road had an incubator called Abbey Road Red, and we joined that that program. So Isabel, who was the managing director there at the time, she said to me, this is great. She said, because you're not one of those, you know, AI companies, you're not just something to do with producer rights or something. She said, you're really solving a business problem in this business. And they backed us, you know, you get to go and have your photo on the Abbey Road steps. You know, I did early investment meetings there. I'd say to people, hey, do you want to come meet me at the cafe in Abbey Road? Which was, you know, kind of a really big moment to use. But actually, you know, Isabel left Abbey Road. She's now the COO at Warner, one of the biggest music groups in the world. And she came and joined as an advisor as well and carried on, because we built that relationship of just trust in somebody that we could go to. And I think that's what's always really helped us.
You've created something special. I know people have come after you. In a word or in a sentence, why have you said, no, thank you, we still want to retain our independence? What is it about the independence that you want to protect, Ryan?
I think we're still growing like crazy, and we're having fun with it. You know, that doesn't mean every day is fun. It doesn't mean we have really tough days, because we do. But I think the team are brilliant. The product is working. The customers that we're working with are buying more and growing more and really working on it. And they're seeing the benefit on the other side. And look, never say never, because, you know, we'd be very hard on certain deals that come across the desk. And it's been hard to date. We've had three pretty serious ones that would have been, you know, kind of almost generational wealth, not just for me, but for team members and other people. But everybody keeps saying, look, you don't stop now, right? You know, your passion is there, your energy is still there, you know, keep going. And I think you mentioned the craziness. And I think, you know, sometimes maybe I'm able to shut myself off from some of it and go, actually, come on, head down, keep going, just forget everything and all the outside noise.
It's been great talking to you.
Thank you.
Lovely. A real pleasure, actually, and a treat. Head down, keep going. I'm going to remember that today. Just before I let you go, what is your song choice and why have you chosen it?
So my song choice is Cantaloupe Island, Herbie Hancock. And I just think it's a beautiful piece. It's been covered many, many times. I've played, you know, growing up, kind of funk versions of it, upbeat versions, slow versions. And yeah, just done many things. And it's my always my go-to. If somebody says to me, choose a jazz song, it wouldn't be my jazz record, that would be Miles Davis Kind of Blue, because it's just perfection. But this song is just, yeah, it's just awesome.
Herbie Hancock with Cantaloupe Island, the song choice of my business shaper today, Ryan Edwards. He talks about taking small steps. Think about each step. Don't worry about all of the steps you need to take. This is what I found. The fact he happened upon it rather than he was going looking for it. He found the problem. Just a small idea that got out of hand, in his words. What a lovely way of talking about the serendipity of life. And he's brought people along with him who can help him. He's put people on that board, a really smart and humble thing to do. And finally, again, back to the humility of Ryan. Head down, keep going. That's his mantra. That's why it's working so well. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.